And that is the kind of leaders that we need, who have a will, who are very clear, but who are also intuitive, who can listen to the heart, who are very nurturing, empathetic, caring, who understand the interconnectedness of life, and at the same time have the capacity and will to make things happen. So this is really emerging, and I totally agree with Clay that this is the kind of leader we need now, and the heart of such leaders is compassion.
Hello everyone, welcome to In Search of the New Compassionate Male. I'm the producer, Dennis Tardon, and I'm here with the founder and the host of the podcast, Clay Boykin. Hello, Clay.
Hi, Dennis. Today, I can't tell you how excited I am. Arun Vakru from India is with us, and we're going to be talking about a topic that is near and dear to my heart, leadership. And, you know, on the show, how many times we talk about various aspects of leadership and servant leadership and so forth. Well, Arun is so well versed in all this. I'm really anxious to get started. So welcome, Arun.
Thank you very much, Clay. Thank you, Dennis. Delighted to be here with you both.
It is our pleasure. You know, Arun, as I looked at your YouTube and I looked at your page, compassion has such an element of what leadership is all about. And this is something that comes in that has not been, and I see India as taking a lead in the world in this, in bringing compassion, and compassion being the lubricant that takes the rust off the gears and begins to do. So could you talk a little bit about your journey into your awareness about the role and the value of compassion in leadership?
Sure. Thank you. Leadership is really about creating new futures. It is about somebody having a vision of a world that works for all. And then through their thoughts, words, and actions, actually manifesting that world. To me, that is what leadership is about. And if that kind of leadership comes from a space of compassion, and it comes from a space of deep wholeness, the kind of leadership that emerges from there is really compassionate leadership, or what we call wholesome leadership. Mm-hmm. It is something that takes care of all people. It takes care of all aspects of life. It takes care of the inner aspects of life and external aspects of life. And therefore, that is why compassion, leadership based on compassion, based on wholeness, is the absolute need of the hour. Yeah. In the past, leadership has typically been focused on maybe an organization or a nation. But when you zoom out, when your vision zooms out and you think of all beings on the planet, you think of all of planet Earth, and you zoom in to the deepest layers and deepest depths of consciousness, that is the kind of leadership that India stands for, that is needed in the world. And I think at the heart of such leadership is infinite compassion.
I so love what you're saying. You know, so what comes to mind is a book, The Leadership Challenge, that I read years and years ago. And the first thing I talk about is creating an inspired vision. And yes, that's exactly what I heard you just say.
Absolutely, yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Arun, when... Right now, in our current global situation, men are overly dominant. Men who are genetically are overly dominant in most leadership roles in most countries. So in our work, what we're talking about in search of the new compassionate male, and that Clay has founded and has taken all over the world, it's the... And this is not just, Clay, would you explain, it's not just men?
So, yeah, you know, this whole idea of the compassionate man and the necessity of it and getting to the essence of that, getting men to connect head and heart and to integrate, you know, it occurred to me that, well, that male energy is in all of us, women and men.
Yes.
And so I'm really looking at the compassionate male, the nuance being the compassionate male energy. And I don't profess to say, here's the answer, come see me. And that's why I'm in search of the new compassionate male. And that's why I'm talking all over the world and getting everyone's comments. And
because men, genetic men, happen to be in these roles, and men in the United States were not traditionally asked to get our emotional intelligence and our spiritual intelligence, really to invest in that. We were the hard driving, the patriarchal, working into, you know, up the pyramid.
Absolutely.
That paradigm has to change in order for us to be able to have success and compassion. To be able to have so,
yes.
So can you talk about the male hierarchies that are in, that you see both around the world that are evolving or changing in the leadership that you're seeing?
Sure. So I think I'm reminded of a beautiful prophecy that was made in the deep forests of South America, which was about the day that the eagle and the condor would fly together. Now, the eagle is symbolic of the male energy, you know, dominating, mechanistic, patriarchal, you know, trying to rule over nature and so on. So the eagle has flown for years and years and years, symbolically, metaphorically. And what we have seen as a result of that over-dominant male energy has been the kind of destruction, the imbalances that you see on the planet. And the prophecy goes on to, and the condor, on the other hand, was symbolic of the more feminine side of life. You know, the heart, you know, dreams, emotions, nurturing, and so on. And the eagle kind of drove the condor away for years. And then the whole myth or the story is that a day will come when the eagle and the condor will fly together in balance. And I think we are on the threshold, we are on the cusp of such a change. It is happening now. And what that means for leadership is it means that the leaders of the future who will midwife our civilization into a new planetary era will be people who are balanced between the male energy and the female energy. They will not be predominantly male, nor will they be predominantly female, but they will be whole. We call them wholesome leaders, leaders who embody the masculine and the feminine energy. And it could be a woman who's a wholesome leader, or it could be a man who's a wholesome leader. But such leaders embody both dimensions in wholeness, symbolized by the eagle and the condor flying together. And in India, we have another symbol called the Ardhanarishwara. And the Ardhanarishwara is half man and half woman. Mm-hmm. It is a form of Shiva who is half man and half woman, integrated as one. And that is the kind of leaders that we need, who have a will, who are very clear, but who are also intuitive, who can listen to the heart, who are very nurturing, empathetic, caring, who understand the interconnectedness of life, and at the same time have the capacity and will to make things happen. So this is really emerging, and I totally agree with Clay that this is the kind of leader we need now, and the heart of such leaders is compassion.
And you know,
because it is compassion that balances energies.
Mm-hmm. And they are emerging all over the world, as we saw in your YouTube, and I encourage anyone to go to that, as we're seeing. Clay, I interrupted you.
Well, that was a wonderful TED Talk. Arun, I just
thank you.
And so it's going to be, and I'm going to include that on the website too, along with this conversation.
Thank you so much.
It is so profound. You know, as you were talking, my mind went to, we knew this at one time. Mm-hmm. We had yes. this knowledge because you were just talking about the symbol of half man, half woman, you know, yes. and in the indigenous yes. American cultures here,
first people.
The first people. Thank you, Dennis. The first people, they talk about the solar masculine and the lunar masculine.
Yes.
The solar feminine and the lunar feminine.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And, you know, we're the solar, we're all in our head. And we guys yeah. have got to embrace mm-hmm. the lunar, not move there, but yeah. integrate the two.
Integration,
and of course, generalization. But women are relegated into their lunar energy.
Yes,
you know, the female, yeah. the yeah. British, and they're rising up to embrace their solar. The yeah. key thing yeah. is that the solar feminine and the solar masculine, they're both solar, but they manifest. Different, and both are needed, and the same with the lunar. And then absolutely. Howard Teach, who we interviewed, he said, Clay, think about it like this. The lunar leads and the solar mm-hmm. executes.
Absolutely.
And, well, I tell you, when I first thought about that, I thought, lunar lead?
Stunned.
Absolutely. Because leadership begins in the heart.
Absolutely. Yeah, yes.
To set the vision, to set the blue sky. Where are we going? What is the, beautiful. Where is our North Star? How are we doing? And beautiful. Then the solar beautiful. Executes to get there.
Absolutely. And you know, Clay and Dennis, I'm reminded of a beautiful image that has stayed with me from a book by Shakti Gawain. She was a wonderful yes. writer. So she says that imagine a queen sitting on a throne, and that is your inner feminine. And standing next to the inner feminine is a bodyguard with a sword. He's the inner masculine. And the work of the bodyguard is twofold. Number one, to protect the inner woman from any harm, any disturbance and all that, and to execute her orders. Now, this is such a beautiful hierarchy. It's exactly the same thing. It is absolutely wonderful. Mm-hmm. So for a leader, let the deepest core of wisdom in your heart, your connectedness to life, let that be the guide. Yeah. And let your mind then execute the mm-hmm. guidance from the heart. So I find that a beautiful metaphor. Because the inner woman is the one who's connected to the whole universe.
Yes.
The inner woman is that side of us, man and woman, who is intuitively, spiritually, emotionally one with all of life. Yeah. And that is the universe speaking to you. That is the place in you where the universe is speaking to you. And the mind has to execute. The mind is a servant. But what has happened is, in the past, the inner woman has got trapped into something and got locked into a cupboard. And the inner man, who was supposed to be a servant, has started masquerading as the master and created a mess. And the time now has come to reclaim the inner woman, to bring her back onto her throne and say, thy shall be done. Now, when I say inner woman, I'm not talking of women per se. I'm talking of that side of you, as Clay, you put it beautifully, the heart, the intuitive side, the part of you that is connected to the wisdom of all of life. And that should be the lodestar, Dennis. That, as you put it beautifully, that should be the compass. And the word compassion has got a compass in it.
Yes.
So let that compassion be the compass. And it's also got no eye in it, the compass of no eye. Now let me explain that a little bit. The male is I. The ego. But when you knock that ego away and you transcend that ego, there's no I. And that no I, when you make it a compass, that is compassion. I love to play with words so you can see the words have hidden meanings inside them. Now, when you make compassion or love your lodestar and you make that your compass, and the mind's role is to execute your intelligence and will and all that is to execute what compassion is saying to you, magic happens. And that's the kind of leadership which we call wholesome leadership. It's leading with compassion, leading with wholeness, leading with deep remembrance of who you really are. Because another big problem that has happened is we've forgotten who we are. We have forgotten our wholeness. We have forgotten our interconnectedness with all of life. And that has to be reclaimed. And I call it awakening, call it enlightenment, call it a return, returning to home, call it whatever you like, but that is the need of the heart.
But what I love about what you're saying, Arun, is that if we're getting to be reminded, that means it was already there. We don't have to create it. It's already there.
Yes, absolutely, Dennis. Absolutely, beautifully put. It's all there. Our interconnected with life is there. Our wholeness is there. The inner woman is there. It's just that we have forgotten. So really what we need is to reclaim. One word we use a lot in our work is we have to reclaim the awareness of our oneness with all these things. And that's waking up. That's waking up. And the word reclaim, it anagrams into miracle.
Oh. You're a master, Arun.
I love your wordsmithery. I love how you love words. Was English your first language?
It wasn't really. I was born in Kashmir, but we grew up with English. I was studied in England for a while. My father was doing his PhD there. So English is pretty much in the blood. So.
But still, the thinking, do you think differently when you think in Hindi than when you think? I mean, there are things like Clay and I were working with some Russians lately, and there is a difference when you do literature in Russian in the mother tongue than it is when.
Yes. Yeah. No, it just comes naturally because we've grown up with English, so it just comes naturally. But I think the play of words are things that just come, you know, out of the blue in the morning after meditation. You just get these little insights, like compassion has compass in it, or that when you reclaim who you are, then that's you are one with the miracle of life.
Yeah.
So, and these things just come. So it's playful. I mean, life is play. In India, we say life is a leela. It's a play. Yeah, and so play along, be playful, be creative, be joyous.
I so love that. You know, the one thing that keeps ringing true, and every once in a while I have to kind of point this out, we're not talking about moving from a patriarchy to a matriarchy.
No,
we're not talking about this pendulum swing. And I get hit with that every once in a while. That's not what we're talking about here, is it?
Absolutely, not at all. We're talking of integration.
Yeah.
We're talking of wholeness. And it's not as if, I think, as Dennis, you put it nicely, it's not that we have to reinvent it. We have to get it from somewhere. No, we just have to relax into the wholeness of life where it's all there. I mean, you go to a rainforest, you just look at life as a whole, and the default condition of life is joy, creativity, health, wholeness, balancing, dancing. That's life. Life is like that. But we have strayed away from the wholeness of life. We've strayed away from the wonderful, magnificent, creative energy and love and compassion that life is. And all we have to do is let go of these illusions and come back home to the default condition of wholeness and compassion and love. So we don't have to create a new system, because if you're creating a new system, again, you're getting into some new ego. you're coming out of one ego.
Here we go again.
And here we go again. So literally, you have to let go of all these. You've got to let go of the mind, because it is the mind that creates these funny things. And so when you let go of the mind, and you come home to who you really are, which is silence and emptiness and joy and compassion, infinite joy, infinite compassion, infinite wholeness. That's life in its purest form. And just come back to it. That's it. You don't have to create something new or create some new invention. No, not at all. You don't have to do that. That's, again, the mind playing tricks with you.
I agree with that.
You just have to relax into the wholeness of life, relax into the innocence and purity of life, relax into non-doing. Now, this might sound funny. You know, pardon my saying this, but there was somebody from the United States, and he was in a rush. So somebody said, "Where are you going? What's the hurry?" He said, "I'm going to get a crash course." Crash course in what?
I want a crash what a word. Course in crash in rela- course. Oh my God!
And so they said, "Crash course in what?" He said, "I'm going for a crash course in relaxation." And the same man said, "God, give me patience. I want it right now." So, you know, it's the mind. The mind is like that.
It's a wonderful servant, but a terrible master.
Absolutely. Well said. Absolutely. So, yes.
You know, you've used a word, a term that is so common, and yet it hasn't really been in my vocabulary when I think of leadership. And it's so obvious when you mention it, wholesome.
Yes.
And
yes.
You've got a process related to wholesomeness. Is this?
Yes.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's clear. It's really coming back home to the wholeness that's already there. At the heart of wholesome leadership is awakening. Wake up to who you really are. So when you wake up to who you really are, then you find that your vision expands, you become universally responsible, you start caring for other people, you start becoming more conscious in what you're envisioning. Is it coming from the heart? Is it coming from a deep love for all people? Or is it coming from some egoic need to achieve this or achieve that or do that? I'm not saying don't be ambitious. Of course you have to be ambitious, but let your ambition come from your oneness with life. Let life's ambition, the ambition of the whole, be your ambition. Can you become an instrument of the wholeness of life? And when we say wholesome, we mean balanced. As life is, we mean healthy, we mean pure and innocent. I mean, it's just another word for life. Life in its purity, in its default condition, is wholesome. And leadership that is one with the purity, the innocence, the beauty, the sheer joy and creativity of life is wholesome leadership. It's as simple as that. So it's coming home to wholeness, Clay. It's about coming home to the wholeness that abounds, that's already there.
Yeah. So what just came to mind was, you bring this into executive coaching. You bring it into the boardroom. Yes. How in the world can you do that?
Yeah, but the thing is that how in the world, Arun, how in the world can you not? Why would you go to all the other places and search for it when the place it most needs to be is there?
Yes.
I totally agree, Dennis, but I tell you what, I've done it and I've been thrown out.
But Clay, when you were doing it back in the, what, in the 90s?
80s and early 90s.
Yeah. This was when things have significantly changed in the minds and the heart. I'll only say for my own, in the executives that I've worked with now.
Yes.
They're having different conversations than we had back in the 80s and 90s.
Absolutely.
So, Arun, could you talk about that?
Sure. No, absolutely correct. I think one of the most beautiful things that COVID has done is it has got people to rethink their life. Many, many executives are asking questions like, why are we here? Like a, you know, a very, very large organization, which is a conglomerate, huge conglomerate, is gathering its executives from all over the world. I think it's over 30, 40 billion US dollar conglomerate, where the whole conversation is around what is the purpose of our business? What is the purpose of my life? So these conversations have started happening. Conversations are also happening around, okay, if I have to be more agile, what makes for agility? Now, when you go deeper into what makes for agility, you find at the heart of agility is no mind, right? So we start with agility and how can we work better as a team. But when you probe deeper into that, you find the heart of inner agility is that incredible creativity, open-heartedness, open-mindedness that is needed. Yeah. So I'm reminded of a story, you know, that will address what Clay is saying. You know, I mean, I love Belgian chocolates. You go to Belgium and you have chocolate. It's so beautiful, creamy, melts in the mouth. But if I want to catch fish, I will not put Belgian chocolate on the hook. I will put a worm on the hook because the fish wants worm. So when we talk these things to corporates and so on, we rarely address their needs. It could be engagement. It could be retaining millennial people who are always looking for higher purpose. It could be autonomy. It could be shared leadership. It could be creativity, whatever it is. And we say, okay, well, let's start with your agenda and then show them how wholesome leadership addresses their needs and gives them much more value, much more joy, much more health. And everybody, and you ask anybody on the planet, what are you looking for? I bet there's not a single person who won't finally say, I'm looking for happiness. I'm looking for peace. I'm looking for joy. Well, if that's what you want, well, that's what we are saying life is. Come back home to life. Drop your illusions. Drop all the rubbish in the mind and just come home to what life wants you to be. That's what life wants you to be. So I think it's a slow process of purification, if you ask me. So we say, well, let's purify some of the illusions. Let's purify some of the notions. Let's purify you of judgment. Let's purify you of identification with a certain race or a certain community or something. I mean, let's clear up that stuff.
May I ask a practical question? Because here in the United States, we are in a polarized society.
Yes,
that is very much like the Kashmir. That, and I mean, I say that, you please correct me if I'm out of my metaphor here. But we need this healing, this opportunity is an extraordinary opportunity for healing. It has come there. So what I saw in your TED talk, here you have Pakistan children talking to directly to, with no intermediary, talking to Indian children. And it's the Kashmir, this place that was partitioned, that artificially set up this conflict. How does that be addressed so that we can address our divides here in the United States?
Beautiful, beautiful question. That's really nice. The first thing to understand is that the majority of people in any society are peace-loving, are very, very compassionate, are people who imagine and work for wholeness. The majority of people are like that. But a small minority in every society are the ones who create divisions, who create fragmentation and so on. So this is a very, very important point. The vast majority is for wholeness, for oneness, for compassion, for love, for togetherness. In Kashmir, it's the same. In the United States, it's the same. In Pakistan, it's the same. In everywhere in the world, people, you ask a common man, what do you want? He says, I want my children to have good education. I want them to live well. I want them to be happy, healthy, Africa, everywhere. But a tiny minority who are bent upon creating divides for various vested interests and reasons are the ones who start creating division. Now, what the media does, it doesn't focus on the large percentage of people who are loving and caring and helpful to their neighbors. It'll focus all its attention on those few people, those few events, and amplify that and spread it out into the whole system. Now, when you see, now I live in Kashmir. I mean, one of our homes is in Kashmir. My mother lives there. We go there every summer. 95% of the people of Jammu and Kashmir, in Pakistan, in India, and every part of it, are people who love peace. They want compassion. They want to get on with their work. They want to, right? But a small percentage don't want that. And the media focuses on whom? Can you guess where the media goes?
Yeah.
They want to get the PR.
We have an expression in the United States in the news business, because I'm part of the problem, because I've been a journalist for this, yeah, is that if it bleeds, it leads.
You got it.
And that's our human. It's much easier to look at what's going wrong. It's harder to build something and to create something that is going on than to just focus on what's clay.
You know,
exactly, Clay. Yes.
Yeah, and the idea of compassion. I've yet to meet a man when I say, are you compassionate? I always get, well, yes, I am. I say, well, what does that mean to you? And I get this, I get this deer in the headlight look, you know, or the, huh? But that supports exactly what you're saying, is that that's our innate. That's innate. Part of our DNA.
Absolutely.
But I had to go find the language to express that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And the other thing, so therefore, just to carry on this further, now, how do you create healing? So the way to create healing is by looking at that large mass of people and finding the imaginal cells in those people. Now, the imaginal cells, I'm sure you may have come across this little thing. Nori Huddle wrote a beautiful book called The Butterfly. And in that, she talks of how a caterpillar gets converted into a butterfly. What happens is that certain cells inside the caterpillar, called the imaginal cells, are the butterfly cells, but they get eaten up by the immune system of the caterpillar. So they get killed. But slowly they start clumping and clustering, and you know, they come together and so on. And slowly, they're strong enough together to overpower the DNA of the caterpillar, and then the butterfly is born. Now, this is a very, very powerful metaphor, imaginal cells. I believe that in every society, there are imaginal cells. There are people such as yourself. There are people who are sparked, who have that inner spark of compassion and love, and a little bit more active. Can we gather the imaginal cells together? Can we get them to clump and cluster? Can we come as we are doing now?
I'm going to say yes. We are all three of us committed to that.
Yeah.
So what this happens is it creates its own momentum. It creates its own energy. Just like if I want to convert a bowl of warm milk into yogurt, we add a little bit of culture in that. We add a little bit of culture in India and leave it to set, and next morning you have a whole pot of yogurt. So like that in society, we say that find the I catalysts. We call them the I catalysts. I catalysts are there, they're anchored in infinite compassion. And from that space of infinite compassion, they initiate things, they're inspired, they facilitate integration and innovation using tools. Compassion is not enough. You have to have tools with you. So we're developing these I catalysts, and you can check them out on our website called One Wholesome World, and it tells you more about the I catalyst program. Yes.
Please say the website again.
www.onewholesomeworld.com.
And it's all spelled out.
Yeah, it's all onewholesomeworld.com. And you can download our book in that. There's a beautiful book that my father, Professor Dr. Omkar Vakil, and myself, we wrote And my daughter who lives in Portland, Oregon, Nitya, she illustrated it. So you can download the book free from this website, www.onewholesomeworld.com. And that talks about the eye catalyst program, Dennis. Healing cannot happen. Healing cannot happen unless I am whole myself first. I must come home to my wholeness. Otherwise, I cannot heal anyone, or neither should I attempt to.
I've never seen any teacher that I have followed that did not, Jesus, Gandhi, Buddha, whatever, did not say, I will go first.
Absolutely.
I will demonstrate the principle myself, and then you can follow.
Absolutely. And the funny thing is, and you don't even need to get anyone to follow. It just happens.
It happens. I want to ask you something, Arun.
Sure.
Is that because in your TED talk, you were talking about the disparity of wealth, that 1% of the people own 93% of the global wealth.
Yes, that is
where I think is so valuable of you being on the insurgency on the inside, because that's where if you can influence one of the executives in there, that's going to infect a huge amount of.
Absolutely. Yeah. But you know, at least the way I operate is, I just surrender to wholeness. I just surrender to wholeness and let wholeness do all the strategic planning, and let wholeness do all the who has to connect with whom and how. Because it's too complex for a mind, no matter how intelligent a person is, it's too complex.
But how do you put that on a PowerPoint slide?
Clay comes from there.
Clay, I see. Well, I just share with you two or three metaphors I use. One is the metaphor of the empty flute.
Yeah.
You know, in India, we have a beautiful image of Krishna. Krishna is one of the forms of the divine radiance of life. Krishna, an avatar who plays the flute. And the flute is totally empty. Even if there's the slightest dirt or spit or anything in the flute, you don't get the music. So the flute is symbolic of a pure heart and open-heartedness. And let Krishna play the music. And when Krishna plays the music, we don't praise the flute. We don't say, oh, wow, that was fantastic. What a lovely raga you played. No, we praise Krishna. So like that, when you surrender your whole life to wholeness, you surrender your life to life. You say, hey, you run what you want. I mean, it's your play. It's all yours. Then mysteriously, you find the right connections, the right things happen, and the money comes, and whatever has to happen just happens, and you're peacefully playing along with life.
Well,
and go ahead.
Finish your point. Yeah.
No, I was just saying, then your will, again, a play of words, your will becomes wholeness in loving Leela. W-I-L-L-A. Wholeness is doing it. I'm not doing anything.
Yeah.
I mean, how did I mean, if it wasn't for Susan Soleil, I wouldn't be talking to you.
Yeah.
So she felt a calling from within that I want to connect Arun to Clay and Dennis, and here we are.
And that's
I didn't tell her, right? She got a little guidance from inside, and here we are.
Yeah. She says hi, by the way. I was on a call with her yesterday.
Yeah. Wonderful. Yeah.
Okay, so I have to say something for the record here.
Sure.
I was being a little facetious when I said the PowerPoint, okay?
Oh, I thought it was a wonderful question, Clay.
Well,
yes.
I mean, I get it. I get it. Because in the early 90s, I brought heart into an organization. I didn't have the language to explain it.
A huge computer organization in the United States. I mean, in the world, Motorola. So
yeah, and so
beautiful.
Yeah, and this organization had all the talent and what have you, but there was something that wasn't working. It was sick.
Yeah.
But they were wonderful people. And I don't have an engineering degree, but yet I was come in to lead part of the organization. I had to have them successful. So I created the environment as I would create it, you know, wrap my arms around them and bring heart into the organization.
Beautiful. That's
and
so
we did miraculous things. It was wildly successful. And totally. It's what you're talking about. But back to the PowerPoint, if a general manager said, well, Clay, you're going to come in and fix my organization. You're going to do that. Well, give me a PowerPoint presentation on that. I thought, oh no, if you need to put it on PowerPoint, then we've got some real basic work to do here.
Can you just sit and go, with that, I mean, while that is the whole message, that is the entire point.
Yeah. Well, so luckily, Clay, things have changed now.
Wonderful.
I think way back in 2000, I wrote a book called Managing from the Heart. And again, it's something people can download freely. This was around 20 years back. But things have changed now. And people are recognizing that spirit makes all the difference in organizations. Heart makes all the difference. And there are lovely tools like appreciative inquiry, like open space technology, World Cafe, and a few other tools that make it easier to bring heart into organizations, into organization development. Mm. Yeah, and even a simple thing like quiet time.
Yes.
Just sitting silently in a meeting, finding that when there's conflicts, tempers are all over the place. Let's just be quiet for 1 or 2 minutes. We do this regularly and people report amazing success. I mean, in my coaching, Clay, I spend a lot of time getting people to learn the art of mindfulness.
Yes.
Learning the art of being present. Because if you're not present to what's happening, then how can you manage? If you're not present to your feelings, you're not present to your mind, you're not present to what's going on, then how can you manage other people when we can't manage ourselves? So I think mindfulness, heartfulness, that's another beautiful meditation practice that is gaining ground. I think all these are definitely coming in. And people with a McKinsey background are talking about heartfulness with a PowerPoint.
Yes.
And beautiful PowerPoints.
Mm-hmm.
So things are changing, Clay. Things are changing, yes. And thank God for that.
Yes,
I find one of the Arun and Clay that when we look historically, like for example, in India, India was doing levels of science and mathematics and spirituality and art when Clay and my ancestors were chewing bones, and were just really having a barely rough existence. India was already at the pinnacle and doing this time, the way things shift, and now things are happening at an accelerate that if we were to step back on it and look on it from a geological perspective, we would say that there was something that was just happening that's going to be, historians will look back on and go, an enlightenment happened.
To your point, Dennis,
we were having a conversation, and I forget who it was, but someone said, I'm sorry, I won't live long enough to see that change happen. And we will. What used to take 100 years to change is going to take a decade.
We are
in the middle of it right now. This is the exciting space to be.
It's
a little painful at times.
And the way you described, Clay, as we were speaking about how these podcasts and these messages will go all over, I think you'll never know who it will touch, where, and what it will do. But the universe knows, the wholeness of life knows where this message has to go, whom it has to touch. what will happen. And so we have to trust. And the other thing, I think, as leaders, the other metaphor I love using is the metaphor of the joker in a pack of cards. It does not belong to any suite. It is nothing really. It has no suite. It's not hearts. It's not spades. It's not diamonds, clubs. It's nothing. And yet, it can play the role of anything in an instant. That is the wholesome leader. That is the leader who's nothing inside and yet can take on any role that life wants them to take on. These are the healers. These are the people who will be the imaginal selves of the future. Wow. People who at their heart are not only empty, but they are compassion. They're not being compassionate. It's not, I'm an ego and now I'm being compassionate. No, your ego has dissolved, finished. You are compassion. You are silence. You are that love of the heart.
I love how you use words, because I just heard you say an empty leader is going to be successful. Now, in a traditional Western thought, that dog's not going to hunt. So I so appreciate how you use it.
Right.
Yeah, but it's not an empty emptiness. Uh-uh. It's a very generative, creative energy. It is incredibly powerful.
How yes. it's like a blank sheet of paper awaiting to be filled.
Absolutely. It's that kind of creativity. It's that kind of space. And it's very peaceful. Very peaceful. Very silent and spontaneously intuition arises as the universe works through you. Beautiful things arise, beautiful things happen. I think that is, we have to be in service of the wholeness of life.
You know, Arun, when I look back upon my life, I'm 72 this year, will be 73. Clay is in his mid-60s. And when I look back on my life, I cannot think of a single situation where if I had been more peaceful, it would not have been better. Not one situation. And that only is madness that I would forget that I would sit there and just say, well, I think I ought to just really –
Yeah, absolutely. And Dennis, when you're peaceful, when you're like a silent, empty space inside, you're guided by the universe. Intuition speaks to you. Life speaks to you. And you know exactly what to do. You know exactly what to do. You just have to trust it. I have to tell you a little story of a doll made of salt. There was a doll and she was made of salt and she was walking around on the land and one day she comes to the sea, to the ocean. And she said, what is this ocean? What is this? I've never seen this before. So she asked the ocean, can you tell me who you are? And the ocean said, yeah, sure. Come forward a little bit. So she goes a little bit forward and she suddenly finds her feet are gone because the ocean has kind of dissolved her feet. She said, oh my, but who are you? Who are you? She tells the ocean. She asks the ocean. Ocean says, come a little bit forward. I'll tell you. She goes forward and her legs go away and her torso goes away. And then she says, oh, now I know who you are. We are one and we are the ocean. This is a metaphorical journey of the evolution of human beings, of slowly dissolving the ego away and coming back to wholeness, coming back to life. And when you come back to life, you literally come alive. You come back to health. You come back to peace. You come back to oneness. And in India, I think there's a beautiful message that India gives to the world. And that is, we are all one family. Vasudhaiva Kutumbakam, we say all of the world is one family. And not just people, we're saying the earthlings. The elephants and the rhinos and all of us are one family. The trees, the stars, the lakes, it's all one beautiful family. And in a family, you have to love each other. You have to be compassionate to each other. So we say be compassionate. Let that compassion first start with yourself. Let the compassion first be with yourself. There's a huge need for compassion for yourself. Forgiving yourself. I mean, honoring yourself. Honoring, not judging yourself, not getting stuck in guilt or stuck in I'm not okayness. I mean, Just come back to unconditional okayness. Then compassion for other people. See, as you said, Dennis, right in the beginning, namaste. The same sacred wholeness that makes you breathe, makes me breathe. I mean, did you know, for example, in the breath that you just took, Dennis, a few thousand atoms of argon that Jesus breathed in his lifetime are part of that breath you just took, Dennis? Or clay, Buddha's few thousand, the same interbeing of life. So compassion for other people. I'm your family. How can I not be compassionate to you? I mean, you're me. We're two waves on the same ocean. And then compassion for the trees and the animals and Mother Earth and the microbes and the soil. It's just that. I'm going to keep quiet for a while now.
Please don't.
There is one thing.
Yeah?
No, I want Clay to tell.
And some people say, well, compassion is soft. Compassion is, you know, like petting puppy dogs. And can you talk about that part of it?
Absolutely. I think that is absolutely far from the truth.
Yeah.
First thing is, compassion is not a feeling. It's not a state. It's not even actions. Compassion is the very heart of life. It is the very heart of who you are. Now, that's a space of total emptiness. That's total space of silence. It's like a color box with hundreds of colors. And if compassion requires you to do something, well, if it wants you to use color red, fantastic, use color red. If it wants you to use blue, which means compassion can be very tough. I mean, my favorite story here is when Jesus was in, he went into a temple where moneylenders were sitting down and they were exploiting people. He picked up a whip and he lashed the moneylenders and he kicked their boards away and he was furious. He was like a person on fire. Now, Jesus, the Prince of Compassion, whipping people around? I mean, how can he do that? Right? So that also is part of compassion. Krishna fighting a war, warrior, right? Against the Kauravas, you know, and it was a war of righteousness, a war of the good versus the not so good. Krishna, the heart of compassion, how can he fight a war? So I think the key thing is that compassion is neither soft, nor is it hard, nor is it this, nor is it that. It is pure love, and love can take on any form that it needs, but it has to be genuinely coming out of that silence. It may take on the form of you have to do something, you have to do this, you have to do that, but it's certainly not puppy soft for sure. It's very, very tough when required, and it's soft when required. It's masculine when required, feminine when required. It is nothing and yet everything like the Joker in the pack, Clay. We can't say the Joker is clubs. No, the Joker is not clubs. But if it has to play the role of clubs, yes, so be it.
Love that. Your turn, Dennis.
Well, I'm going to end my portion and let you go to the post show with Arun. And just to thank everyone for the opportunity to have this moment of reminding. There is nothing that you said, Arun. There is nothing that you said, Clay. There is nothing that I said that was brand new. It was reminding me. And that's when I know it's the truth, is when I am reminded. And I am so grateful to you both. I'm so grateful for this opportunity. I'm so grateful for the beautiful clockworks of the universe that would bring us here together, and for everyone who has listened to the show and our opportunity to be able to do, Clay, your amazing work in the new Compassionate Mail and bringing this, Arun, your such a storyteller. We human beings are at our core level stories. This is a story, and when you reconnect us back to that through your work, it loosens everything up. But anyway, thank you, Clay, dearest, for taking me along on this journey, and thank you everyone for listening today, and to the new Compassionate Male, and checking out Arun and all of his work and all of the things that we can do. And all we ask is we can one day continue this conversation, Arun.
Sure. Thank you so much.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much. It's been an absolute delight being with you, Clay and Dennis. Thank you for creating an atmosphere, a container in which my heart poured out and I could share freely. I really appreciate that, and I want to thank you for creating such a space. And to all our listeners for listening in, I just pray that you remember the magnificence and beauty and wholeness of who you are, and express that in loving service, in acts of kindness and compassion, so that the world we can co-create will be a world that works for all. Thank you so much, and lots of love to you.
See you next time on In Search of the New Compassionate Male.
So, Clay, how was it for you?
Oh, gosh, that was absolutely wonderful, beautiful. There was so much more to talk about, but I so appreciate the freshness of how you expressed your beliefs in this.
Yes,
and they're the same beliefs that I have.
Sure.
And my vocabulary has been a little bit different. So I'm always looking for ways to broaden and to be able to speak it to a wider audience. You know, I had the opportunity to meet the official biographer for the late Robert Greenleaf.
Nice.
Coined the term servant leadership.
Yes.
And I've actually had him on this show.
Oh, beautiful.
Yes. That's his lovely. His brother happens to be part of our men's circle.
Oh. Okay.
And when I learned that, I literally grabbed his brother in the circle by the lapels and said, "I've got to talk to Don."
Yeah. we have a organization called the Foundation for Peace and Compassionate Leadership. So I'll send you the link to that and to One Wholesome World and to our work. And so I'll share. So. Thank you for that. Yeah, thanks. No, it's been a pleasure listening to you. And Clay, I look forward to learning more about what you did in Motorola and also other things. So we will be in touch for sure.
Please come back. This is conversation one of many. If I have my
wonderful
way.
wonderful. All good. Right. So super. Thank you so much, Clay.
Thank you.
All the best, and I'll be in touch.
Okay. Yeah? Great.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for loving me.
Bye. Bye-bye. Okay.